Yo, 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 Thought Warriors. What is up? Higher Learning is on. It is I, Van Lathan Jr.
And it's me, Rachel Lynn Lindsay.
Rachel Lynn Lindsay. Rachel, I'm in Atlanta.
Hey, wings.
Wings. Oh, wings.
Wings. Have
the
you know
city
that's
of
my
wings.
You know that's my food. Right after pork chops, I love me some wings, so have some for me.
Let's get something out of the way. First of all, I'm not having any wings. I'm really in a good groove of my diet. Thank you for trying to throw me off track. Can I tell y'all something real quick?
Make me feel bad. Yeah.
I'm going to be real with you guys. This time next year, I'm going to be like Brian. I'm lifting so hard.
Good.
Like, I'm in there, man. I might be the fattest nigga who can plank in the whole gym. I might be the best fat nigga at planks.
How long?
In all of LA.
How long you got?
I can hold, I can do, not only can I hold a plank for a minute and a half, right? Okay.
Damn.
But I can do the planks where they take the Viper, the Viper thing? The little, it's like a circle with handles on it at the gym. It's like a circle with handles on it. You hold it like this.
Oh, yeah. I know exactly what you're talking about.
So I can do the planks for a minute where they put the Viper under me. And I move it. I can do the tap my shoulders. Man, I'm hashtag fat strong, baby.
Fat
I'm in
strong.
There doing, I'm in there, like, I got respect from Shannon Sharp. I got respect from Magic Johnson. I'm feeling good working out.
That's what's up. I'm proud of you.
We have somebody new. Jump on now, Ashley.
Hey.
No. Face.
Full on.
Face.
Turn your camera on.
Face. Welcome.
Hey. What's up?
What's wrong with you? So, Ashley's our new producer here on Higher Learning today.
Yes.
Ashley is from, tell everybody about yourself.
I'm from Denver, native here, born and raised, one of the few. New podcast producer here. Trying to come through to LA as much as I can to hang out with you guys. We'll see.
Good, because Donnie never does.
Donnie doesn't
so that'd be good. That you're already one of.
Okay.
Where'd Bane is in Atlanta right now.
Shut up, Donnie.
It won't come see you, Donnie. You're right. Call him out.
Let me ask you something. Ashley, where'd you go to college?
I went to college in Oxford, England.
Yeah. Tell the people. Talk your shit, black lady.
Oxford like she, English.
Oxford English. She went to Oxford.
Yeah.
She went to Oxford. We don't have no ITT techians in this. Florida. Shout out to everybody that went to ITT Tech. That was so classy. Ashley, stay on real quick. Have I ever told you guys my ITT Tech story real quick? So my cousin got out of jail. And his mother was like, you promised that you would go to ITT Tech when you got out of jail and that you would go there and then you would make something better of yourself. So this nigga like, damn, I'm trying to get out of here. I'm trying to hustle, get back on my hustle or whatever. She want me to go to ITT Tech.
Yeah.
I got to go to ITT Tech, whatever. So there's like this orientation little class that you do. It's a technical college in Baton Rouge, a little orientation class that you do. So I went with him. I'm maybe like 14, he's maybe like 21. And they should have used this as an ITT Tech commercial. Is it ITT Tech or DeVry? I can't remember. But it's either one of them. I can't remember. They should use it as a commercial, let me tell you how. Because when you go there and you do the little orientation, they make you like put together, they make you do something technical. They like to give you this little board and they make you like solder this little thing. And then at the end of it, you press this little button and your LED light lights up. Like you build a little light. It's very easy to do.
Uh-oh.
But they say, hey, this is kind of what we're going to be doing here. You're going to learn how to do stuff. It obviously, everybody in the class made their little thing light up. Everyone did. Everyone made their little thing light up.
Mm-hmm.
When this nigga made his shit light up, he thought he was fucking Nikola Tesla. Like you could, it was so inspiring. He was like, moved. He felt like he had invented fucking fire. Guess what he does now? That's what my cousin does now.
What?
He's an electrician. He went on and he finished at the technical college. I can't remember which one it was now. He finished at the college. He never spent another fucking minute in jail. He found his calling, and now he is the guy that knows everything about electricity. As a matter of fact, if I ever build a house, I'm going to have him come out here and put the electric stuff in there. So that's a story about technical college has nothing to do with you. Once again, I hide.
Nothing.
Yeah. I love that story, but it was happy ending.
Like, yeah, it was a good happy ending.
You do not have to lie to kick it.
I love
it.
Happy now, let me ask endings.
Y'all remember that commercial?
What commercial? Yes.
Was it the guy who was yelling at you and he was like, why are you sitting on the couch?
Why are you sitting on the couch? Get up. My question is, where is that motherfucker now? I need to see what he's doing.
Because I want him on the podcast. I absolutely want him on the podcast.
I want him on the podcast.
Find the guy from Everest. Ashley, your first task.
Mm-hmm. Find that guy.
Your first mission, if you so choose it, mm-hmm. is to find him.
So when you went to Oxford, were there other Negro Americans or blacks of any kind there?
I met two.
Two blacks.
Two of them. Yeah, from Colorado, weirdly enough.
And you guys were all ladies?
Yes. And I was walking past, them and I heard their accent. I was like, oh, hello.
You were like, oh my God, niggers. And you just turned around and you ran over there.
Basically.
So like.
Out of how many? Two out of how many?
Thousands.
Thousands.
Yeah.
Wow.
Did you guys start a singing group?
So it was like the third day. And they had to go somewhere. I had to go somewhere. And I never saw them again. So I have no idea where they went. So wherever you are.
Ashley.
Thinking about, yeah.
Singing group?
That's like a real story. That could be like Pitch Perfect Oxford. Let me ask you a question.
Okay.
So did you make friends at Oxford?
I did. I did. You know, it took a second, but yeah.
Caucasoids?
Yeah. Yeah. Well, so like what you're trying spicy. To tell me? Spicy ones from Europe.
Spicy. So you, what you're telling me is that
yes,
you saw two black ladies, you let them pass.
Yes.
But as soon as you saw Becky, Amy, Savannah, you were like, I got to move to the next level in life. So these are the friends I got to make in Oxford.
Well, they're more like Elizabeth, Kate, because they're British.
Ashley can hang. We're happy to have you.
All right.
We're gonna be getting deep into your personal life, and the things that you like. Mm-hmm. And
I'll do my best, Ashley. I'll do my best.
Hopefully, you know. Hopefully, you get on here and you embarrass yourself. That's the way that we do it here.
Okay. I'm gonna do great then. All right.
That's Ashley, everybody. Woo! That's Ashley. All right. It's been quite a day. Rachel.
Has it for you?
I mean, not really for me. Well, it was kind of quite a day for me. So I took the red eye out last night.
Oh.
Because I got to do some stuff while I'm here in Atlanta. So I took the red eye. And I had the middle seat.
Whoa. Were you flown out?
Yes. See, here's the thing.
Where's Aronde?
Wait. But here's the thing. It was a late one, and there was nothing in first class. There was only one left in Comfort Plus, and it was a middle seat, and I didn't want to sit kind of in the back of the plane. So it's kind of like my decision, okay? It's kind of like my decision. I didn't want to sit in the back of the plane. So it's like, I'd rather be in Comfort Plus. I might have had the most uncomfortable flight I've ever had before in my life. First of all, I bought this thing from Amazon, which is like this... It's supposed to be this this inflatable pillow that you can put your head in.
Wait. So you put your head in the front, not in the back.
Yeah.
Okay.
You put your head in like this, and you hold on to it. I looked like the biggest fucking idiot in the history of aviation.
Please tell me you got pictures.
No, I didn't. I threw that motherfucker away when I got off the plane. So I sit down, and Donnie, pull up a picture of this inflatable thing. Like, it's an inflatable pillow that you blow it up, and then you hold it, you put your arms in it, and you put your face in it, right? You put your face in the there's a little hole in the top of it, and you put your face in it, right? And it's supposed to, like, hold you up so you could go to sleep. I thought that's going to work since...
No!
You've seen it. Turn around. Let me see.
Wait, this is not it. This can't be. Hold on. Let me get a bigger picture. This can't be it. This can't be it.
That's it.
No.
That's
the thing. Okay, hold on. I'm making my background.
That's the thing.
There's a picture of somebody. Y'all, please turn on the video right now. There's a picture of somebody doing it. And yeah, I can't believe you flew like this. This is your own fault.
Yeah, that's the thing. It's like
I'm not gonna be able to concentrate the whole podcast. Yeah, that's the thing.
So first of all, let me tell you how this goes. I get on the plane and I sit down, two people, they're nice, left and right. They're a couple. They're taking the aisle seats because I'm in the middle, right? There's three in the middle. They're taking the aisle seats, so they left the one in the middle to whatever plebeian was going to come in there and sit down in the middle seat.
Okay.
They asked me, they go, okay, what are you there? What are you going out to Atlanta for? They're Southerners. And I go, oh, I'm going to watch LSU play in the national championship game. And they go, huh? And I'm like, what? And in the SEC championship game, they go, huh? I go, what? They go, well, we're Alabama fans. And I look over at the guy. He's in full crimson and white. So it's fucked up from right then, right? Because now I had a rapport with these people, but now I got to say something smart. I have to say something smart.
Okay.
So I looked at him. I go, tough break, man. Maybe you guys can try again next year. He's like, try again? Huh. Beat y'all like 8 years in a row. I'm like, well, it's not 8 years in a row. It's this year. You know what I mean? 2-point conversion. Mason Taylor. Shout out Joy, Jason, and the whole Taylor family. Okay. And so now that he's a little perturbed, I'm fucking with him. I had to do it. So, but this is the thing. You don't bring the thing on there inflated. You got to blow it up while you're on the plane. Okay. So you get there and you got to sit down. And this is... Your head goes into the little thing at the top. Okay, your head goes into the little thing at the top. You put your arms in the middle of it, right? And then you're like this. Okay, you're like this, and you try to sleep. So I pull out. It comes with a little carrying case, so I take it out of the carrying case, and I'm blowing it up. And the stewardess right away comes over to my seat. What are you doing? And I'm like, I'm like, oh, no, this is an inflatable pillow. She's like, oh, okay. And I'm like, what the fuck? And what were you going to say?
No, Rachel? I mean, I would have been a little nervous, too. What are you doing? That's not normal behavior. People don't do that.
The guy next to me goes, is that going to take long? And I'm like, actually, I don't know. Fucking Gump. I don't know fucking how long this is going to take. So I blow it up. I put on Interstellar because the Hans Zimmer Cornfield soundtrack puts me to sleep.
Okay.
So we're in the air now. I'm hugged over in the thing. Mm-hmm. You know, I got my head in the little deal. And the whole nine, you know what I mean? And what happens? The fucking thing runs out of air. I wake up back hurting. There's a leak in the air thing. I looked over. I'm crunched over. That's how you're supposed to be in it. That's how you're supposed to be. I couldn't get it to work. That's how you're supposed to be there. I couldn't get it to work. Y'all gotta watch. Y'all gotta see. That's how you're supposed to use it. That's how you're supposed to use it. I couldn't get it to work. And so now I got this thing, right? It's half inflated. It's like the row is super tight. Even though we're in Comfort Plus, it's still like it's not used to what I've been flying. You know, I've been flying. I haven't flown this way in a while. You know, so it's still like taking up mad space, and people are getting grumpy. Like people, yeah.
I would have been upset too.
People are getting grumpy. You know what I mean? and I can't get comfortable. It's 11 o'clock and I still haven't been asleep. Like, I can't get comfortable. I could not fall asleep. So I had a very rough flight. Then I get in here And in booking it, I forgot that you can't check in to your hotel at like 7 a.m. You know what I mean? So I'm here. The hotel is very nice. Like, I'm here. You can't check into your hotel at like 7 a.m. And it took a guy coming like, hey, yeah, I know him. Nah, we'll find him a room. We'll find him a room. I'm like, fuck. And I came in here and I tried to sleep, tried my best to go to sleep. You know, Bozeman had to go to the vet this morning. It was stressing me out.
No, because Kalika and I were supposed to do something today. Bozeman's going to be okay. Mm-hmm. Copper had a similar issue. I was trying to tell her about it. Listen, I don't know who in their right mind would see this and press purchase on Amazon. I don't know how you thought this would be comfortable. First of all, she looks like she's suffocating. Is there an opening where she can breathe?
There's an opening. There's an opening in it.
But like,
I thought it made a lot of sense because when I sleep on a plane, I normally sleep with my head. If I'm going to sleep and I'm not, if I don't have the lie flat seats, when I've slept in it, I either sleep with my head on the window or I sleep with my head on the seat in front of me. So like I sleep like that. I can't sleep going back when I'm on the plane. So I thought that would work. It was, I wrestled with that thing for at least an hour.
It doesn't look comfortable at all. These need to be banned. And I feel like they will be on a no-fly list very soon. This is the van. This is funny. So it's in the room with you still.
No, I threw it away.
Oh, yeah. Man.
Yeah, I got off the plane. I was so... And then I got off the plane. So I stand up on the plane. I'm all disheveled. You know what I mean? Because I'm like, I maybe doze off for like 1 second. I got one ear pod in my ear. I can't find my other ear pod.
That's
Everybody has to exit the whole plane till I find my other ear pod. At least the flight was smooth.
Anyway. I can't stop laughing.
So like now I'm here.
You're here. I hope you got a little bit of a nap. I'm glad.
I got to do stuff with LSU and figure it out.
Wait, is that what you're there for, really, to do stuff with LSU?
Yeah.
Oh, that's really cool. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, do stuff with LSU.
So LSU flew you in a middle seat. Texas would never.
It's not LSU, technically. Technically, it's an organization. It's an organization. And by the way, I made the decision late. How's that sound? I made the decision
late. Like an excuse.
Well, how about this? Let me tell you what it is. You know why Texas would never have to do that? Because Money Bags Texas Longhorns, $1 billion endowment, they would just send the PJ out. Actually, more than $1 billion, $10 billion or something like that. They would just send the PJ out. No, y'all definitely got more money than us. Definitely, that's for sure.
I was recently nominated for, and I'm hoping I get it, for Outstanding Alum under 40 at Texas.
The NAACP Image Awards?
No, at the University of Texas.
Mm. So you wouldn't accept the Image Awards?
That's not even an award. Don't do me. I hope your day gets better. That is cool. So you're going to the game?
Yeah, I'm going to the game.
That's I'm jealous. That's cool.
Yeah.
Is that the Mercedes-Benz?
Mercedes-Benz. I've never been in there before.
Oh, you'll like it. It feels like, unlike SoFi or even Cowboys Stadium, it feels like a real stadium.
Interesting.
Yeah, you'll like it.
Let's look up the University of Texas endowment real quick.
We do. I'd say twice a year we do this.
Really?
Yes, you've done this before because you compared it to Southerns.
Let's do it again. Never tell you about the time. I told you about the time Van Jones got mad at me because I made a video. He was very upset. And I was just
that video was amazing.
Yeah, man.
Okay, let me get
guys,
this.
I'm gonna let y'all know. This is a lot of bullshit in the show today. It is.
Yeah, some of it I'm just like, I don't even know how I could talk about it, but we're gonna try.
Damn! Did I say $1 billion? It's $42.9 billion. Fuck! Y'all gotta play reparations, dog. We did this before. I'm sure we've done it before.
$42 billion. I think it increased.
$42 billion, bro.
We had a better football year. Also, basketball team's number two right now.
Oh, they balling. Oh, them niggas hooping. No doubt about it. They got to get some. They gotta
that
get
only
some
increases the endowment.
Right. All right. The big deal of the day, it was kind of a tie between two big stars. You know what? Let's actually start with LeBron on the other side of it. How about that? We'll start with LeBron.
Let's start with LeBron.
This episode is brought to you by Hotels.com. I was traveling internationally last year. I was in Mallorca. I didn't know the island well. I said, let me head to the north, head towards the water. Let me go on Hotels.com and see what they have available. Something preferably on the beach, maybe even a gym. Not only did I get those things, there was a kids session with exercise, gymnastics in the water, pony rides, a train. It had everything, and I didn't even want any of those things. But at least I knew they were there, just in case I changed my mind. And now finding the perfect hotel has never been easier, thanks to the Hotels.com app. Whether you're looking for a family-friendly, right, all-inclusive, or a relaxing spa weekend, you can find exactly what you need and compare hotel prices, ratings, and amenities side by side. So start planning your next getaway and find your perfect somewhere in the Hotels.com app.
This episode is brought to you by Atlassian. Atlassian software like Jira, Confluence, and Trello help power global collaboration for all teams so they can accomplish everything that's impossible alone. Because individually we're great, but together we're so much better. Learn how to unleash the potential of your team at Atlassian.com. Atlassian.com. Atlassian. Tap the banner or visit this episode's page to learn more.
LeBron James, after a Laker victory, don't look now. The Lakers are playing better.
What are they now?
They're still well below 500, but they're competing in every single game and finding their stride, maybe?
Yes. Stand in what you're saying. Stand in it.
Yes, it's true. Okay, so the Lakers beat the Trailblazers 128-109. LeBron James had a fantastic game. And after the game, he wanted to address what he thought was some hypocrisy in the media. This is what LeBron had to say.
I was wondering why I haven't gotten a question from you guys about the Jerry Jones photo. But when the Kyrie thing was going on, you guys were quick to ask us questions about that.
Okay.
Hold on. And I don't even want you guys to say nothing. When I watched Kyrie talk and he says, I know who I am, but I want to keep the same energy when we're talking about my people and the things that we've been through. And that Jerry Jones photo is one of those moments that our people, black people, have been through in America. And I feel like as a black man, as a black athlete, as someone with power and a platform, when we do something wrong or something that people don't agree with, it's on every single tabloid, every single news coverage, it's on the bottom ticker, it's asked about every single day. But it seems like to me that the whole Jerry Jones situation, photo, and I know it was years and years ago and we all make mistakes, I get it. But it seemed like it's just been buried under, like, oh, it happened. Okay, we just move on. And I was just kind of disappointed that I haven't received that question from you guys. Appreciate it.
Rachel?
I am not well versed in the things that LeBron has been asked in post-game press conferences. Obviously, I think that things that were related to basketball, there's no question he would be asked about controversies, things he's done, said, whatever, involving other players, other teams. Without a doubt, he would be asked those questions. I don't know if he's asked about other social justice issues that aren't related to, not even social justice, but just like other issues involving that affect black people in post-game press conferences. I don't know. So I'm not even saying, correct me if I'm wrong. I'm admitting I have no idea. I don't know if as an interviewer, I would have, it would have, maybe it would have crossed my mind, but I don't know if I would have asked LeBron James that question. And I was, I'm glad he addressed it and I'm glad he answered the question. And surely I, as somebody who's extremely influential in sports and arguably one of the greatest basketball players, I would want to hear his opinion, and he does use his platform to speak out, but I don't know, dare I say fair, for him to say, hold on, I'm trying to figure out why nobody's asked me this question. It's about a football team, Jerry Jones. I don't really, it doesn't really relate to me. So I wasn't shocked that nobody asked him that question, even though I was glad to hear his opinion on it. Mm-hmm. And people might be upset with that, but I don't think it was really fair for him to say it, to be honest with you. It wasn't really relevant to him. It is, yes, black people, yes, it is. I shouldn't say it's not relevant to him. It's just not necessarily a relevant question after a post-game conference for an NBA game.
Hmm. Yeah, yeah, yeah. This is why I love LeBron James. LeBron James knows us. This is one of the savviest things I've seen an athlete do in a long, long time.
Why?
LeBron just flopped. This was a mental. LeBron flopped. LeBron, like, this was an actual flop. LeBron, you know how you barely get touched on the court. You're like, you flopped. LeBron flopped. He just flopped in that press conference, and it was the right thing to do. It was. When people flop on the court.
I agree. It was a flop.
When people flop on the court, it's not like they're trying to get the call. They're trying to help their team. They're trying to help their team. A flop might be weird in the grand scheme of the competition, but for your team, a flop is good. LeBron just flopped for us. He just took a charge. He know damn well. You know what I mean? Like, this is what LeBron did. LeBron wanted to talk about
that. He wanted to talk about it, yes.
And he wanted to hold the media accountable for the way the media portrays black issues, for the way the media has treated this Jerry Jones situation.
Sure.
For all of that. He wanted an excuse to do that, so he took a charge. He flopped. If we wanted to intellectually break this down, there have been other things LeBron has talked about, right? But most of the things that he's talked about have been things that he's been actively involved in. So he talked about the Colin Kaepernick situation, right? But he was kneeling. He was doing all of that stuff, right? And it was the biggest story in sports. Mm-hmm. In this situation, to compare why they're asking him about Kyrie to why they haven't asked him about Jerry Jones.
Correct.
It's like Kyrie is an ex-teammate of LeBron's. Kyrie, it plays in the same league as LeBron. It was the top story in the NBA for at least a week, maybe a week and a half, maybe 2 weeks. So there's no way not to ask him. In terms of this, I don't know too many football players that have actually been asked about this, if we're being honest, mm-hmm. because the power dynamics in the NFL and the NBA in terms of the way the athletes speak, how they talk, and what they're allowed to express.
Very true.
Are different, which is why I'll say again, everyone owes a debt of gratitude to Colin Kaepernick, Nessa, and Eric Reed because they challenged, okay, that status quo and that arrangement, if you will, in the NFL, and they sought to upend it, and they got nothing back for it. I digress. But what I'm saying is, in this particular situation, I mean, I like that energy. I like that energy of calling that out. But the funniest part is he asks why, and then he's about to get a response, and he goes, no. Because he didn't want to really have that conversation. What he wanted to discuss was the issue itself. Sometimes you got to take a charge. Sometimes you got to flop a little bit. We needed a couple of free throws. And I like that. And by the way, LeBron also knows that he got to get back in the barbershop. There's a lot of people that didn't like the fact that he said what he said about Kyrie, that he was sort of as definitive about it as what he was. And so LeBron, he need to get back in the barbershop a little bit. And he just, that was kind of like looking at some of the people, that's like a little dap. So he's very savvy. He's been doing this for a long time. When I saw that last night, I was like, oh, here we go. I was well played. Well played, LeBron. Well played, this motherfucker. Well played. And he's right. And he's right. But that's not all that people talked about. You see Jay Williams in his conference. Jay Williams has a demand from Jerry Jones. Rachel, as a Cowboys fan who represents Jerry Jones here on the podcast, I want to see...
No, that's Stephen A. Smith's job. He has nominated himself to be representative of Jerry Jones on behalf of all Black people. That is what Stephen A. Smith has done. He's trying to backtrack. So you're asking me about Jay Williams, though.
Right. Stephen A. Smith is interesting. Donnie, give me the audio.
Your reaction to all of this.
You mind if I just have a moment, Stephen A., sure. I look into the camera?
Sure.
I just wanted to specifically ask Jerry Jones to denounce racism. I think it's very important with where we're at in this time in history right now. I didn't hear him do that with Colin Kaepernick. His silence was heard all over the country as related to George Floyd. And here was another opportunity where, frankly, Stephen A., I felt like his answer felt to me it was above approach, right? He was above the matter. In the end, we will remember not the words of our enemies, but the silence of our friends. Mm-hmm. Jerry Jones, our friend. I think that's very important. And I say that because I don't condone the 14-year-old kid during that. Like, I agree with you. We're on the same page. 14-year-old kid, curiosity. Yeah. But sometimes in life, there's good people and there's bad people. And what happened on his commentary when he was addressed about this, which he had multiple days to think about, the direct quote was, "I don't know that I or anybody anticipated or had a background of knowing what was involved. It was more of a curious thing." Mm-hmm. Why is Jerry Jones absolving the hundreds of people who were around him who had different intention? Why is he speaking for everybody's intention when you could tell that maybe he was curious, but there were a lot of people there who weren't curious. There were a lot of people there who were racist, and that's okay to say. What was even more concerning for me is that when Kyrie Irving posts a pic of Hebrews to Negroes, we automatically come to the table by saying, you need to denounce anti-Semitism. But Jerry Jones didn't denounce racism.
Okay, so I like this too. I like this energy. There are a couple of differences here. Number one, Jerry Jones was asked about it, and he said he wasn't there to be racist. He was just there to be curious. If it'd been one thing, if Jerry Jones would have been like, I don't want to talk about it. I'm not whatever. I know who I am. Whatever. Then it would have been optional. So Kyrie did react a little poorly. But I like this. They should all denounce racism, right? Like, we never asked them to denounce racism. For me, we being messy, and I love it. This is what we got to do.
And I'm so glad they let Jay Williams come on and talk about it. Because in my opinion, and we talked about this last week, they were letting Stephen A. Smith run with the narrative. I mean, he went on the other day talking about, I know people in Black media have had some things to say about me. And then he directed everybody to go to his No Mercy podcast to listen to what he had to say. And he said it was Black on Black, and he was going to address us. I didn't go listen. I don't have time for that. But I appreciate them having Jay come on to change the narrative, because he was saying what Stephen A. Smith should have said. And I think that's why Stephen A. Smith was very quiet in it. And he kind of tried to backtrack of like, yeah, that's what I was saying. Or yeah. No, that's not what you said. You said you were very fond of him and you were pissed off that photo was used. And Jay Williams goes on to say in that clip, or just that overall segment, that you're not getting the bigger picture of it all. And that's what we talked about. It's not just about the photo. You didn't read the article, because it was bigger than that. The photo was just used to explain other actions of Jerry Jones. So I am for everything Jay Williams said. And I'm so glad now on Twitter, they're saying the doors are going to be locked on Jay Williams tomorrow when he tries to enter the first six studio.
Nah, he'll be there.
No, I'm kidding.
Jay, he'll be there. Like Jay will be there. Jay won't step away from a Koofy. Jay is my man. I'm gonna send Jay a Koofy for Christmas because Jay didn't. They didn't radicalize Jay.
We should have him come on. We should
well,
have
I
him.
I asked for him. Like I asked for him. Jay's my man. They didn't radicalize Jay. I will say this. So the reason why I think I don't want to piss anybody off, but I have to say it. So I think that I need to hear Jerry Jones denounce racism, and I'll tell you why. If Jerry Jones is in fact a racist, and he's not doing a fantastic job of convincing the world that he's not, he has a direct effect on hundreds of black people. Mm-hmm. Not just the players on his team. And this is kind of the difference, right? So a player like Kyrie Irving, a guy like Kyrie Irving has a tremendous influence to normalize misinformation, bad things, anti-Semitism, all of that. So we have to make sure that people that have that particular type of influence have the right information to go off of and are aware of what their words mean. That's absolutely true. That's very true. And we are reminded of that when it comes to black athletes, entertainers, singers, and all of that stuff. Mm-hmm. But when we talk about racism and inequality as it exists for us, it's rarely an influence. It's very structural, right? It's very structural. It's not that your favorite singer is a racist. It's not that your favorite comedian is a racist. It's that your boss is a racist.
Sure.
It's that your principal is a racist. It's that the police are racist. It's that black women go to the doctor and have to deliver babies 12 times higher to die. It's that the medical system is racist. Mm-hmm. It's a systemic thing.
Sure.
That puts up barriers around your life. And so for a guy like Jerry Jones, it's insanely important to know whether or not he is a racist, because he is going to directly speak to the earning potential, policies made,
right,
and all kinds of other stuff that affect black athletes and thereby black families. So what Jay is saying, and I love the fact that when I say we being messy, I mean, we're not taking this shit. Fuck it. Mm-hmm. It's up. Whatever happens, we with it. So I get that that's the energy right now. And I'm not saying it's exactly the same situation, but what I'm saying is he's right.
Yes, he is.
He's right because of the ability to cause harm that somebody who owns the team and is the strongest, most powerful owner in the league can have. I'll tell you something else about Stephen A. Smith. Stephen A. Smith was talking about these owners on the show, and he said, Bob McNair, God rest his soul. I don't know if you guys know who Bob McNair is, but Bob McNair is the owner of the Houston Texans that during the Kaepernick thing said that we can't have the prisoners we can't have the inmates running the prison.
It's not funny.
Stephen A. got to chill, man.
He said that on his podcast? Chill.
No, he said it on First Take.
Oh, he said on First Take.
I was watching this morning. Stephen A. got chill. Roland Martin was fantastic on First Take, by the way. Hey, Donnie, we got to book Roland Martin. Got to have the OG up here. Donnie, just run the audio.
Said he loved Hitler. They gave him an award. I'm just saying, I don't like Nazis, and I don't like what some of the mafias are doing either.
I like Hitler.
Donnie, run some more.
I've said it. The most Nazi-like activities I've seen, and the Nazis, in my view, were thugs. It shook people down, did a lot of really bad things.
But they did good things, too. We're going to stop dissing the Nazis all the time.
Okay.
Donnie, give me another one.
That's right. You're not Hitler. You're not a Nazi. You don't deserve to be called that and demonized.
Well, I see good things about Hitler also. I love everyone, and Jewish people are not going to tell me you can love, us, and you can love what we're doing to you with the contracts, and you can love what we're, what we're pushing with the pornography. But this guy that invented highways, invented the very microphone that I use as a musician, you can't say out loud that this person ever did anything good, and I'm done with that. I'm done with the classifications. Every human being has something of value that they brought to the table.
Keep it going, Donnie.
No, I get you're explaining that, like you said, you love the Zionists. You don't agree with some of the things they're doing, even though you don't support a lot of what's happening. Seriously, I've really studied a lot of history. Plus, I had family that was there. And so, I mean, I don't think Hitler was a good guy. I get the Hugo Boss uniforms, amazing. But, I mean, just because you're in love with the design, you're a designer, can we just kind of say, like, you like the uniforms, but that's about it.
There's a lot of things that I love about Hitler. A lot of things. Hey, Netton, what did you think about that, Netton?
This is insane. You are an insane person. How could you say something? It's okay that...
So let me ask you, you like the Azov Battalion because they openly heil Hitler. They're the leftovers of World War II. They support Zelensky and attacking Russia. So you like the Azov Battalion.
I love everyone.
Well, my point is you are...
Okay. If you guys didn't know, that is Kanye West. He was on InfoWars with Alex Jones and the rest of the deplatformed deplorables. And he got into his Nazi bag. First of all, to everyone that thought that I would get on this podcast and make up anything that I heard at TMZ 4 years ago, go fuck yourself.
People came at you about that?
A lot of people were like, Van, that's not true. Go fuck yourself.
Huh.
All right? They took it out. Didn't feel like it was my place to get mad for somebody else's community. Even though at that particular point, maybe I should have reacted differently. There's a lot going on in my life right there. I'm not a perfect person. But the reality of it is, called them on that too. They took it out. I didn't talk about it. It is what it is. But go fuck yourself. I wouldn't make anything like that up. Number two, and this is the only thing I'll say about this. This isn't about Kanye anymore. It's not. Not to me. This is what it's about. Kanye West is a blessing. Ye West is a blessing. It's a blessing. Okay? So I get a lot of feedback from a lot of people. And the feedback that I get, I actually got a really beautiful message. I'll read it. I'll read it right here. Because I think that it actually came from a good place. I'm not going to call out the person that sent this, but I think this message came from a good place. It says, appreciate your perspective, fam, and I truly am a fan. I am not... nor would I ever consider myself to be a Ye fan, primarily because of his behavior. That being said, mental illness is an underreported aspect of his downfall. I have a close family member who I have seen devolve over the course of the last 5 years due to schizophrenic behavior. I say behavior because he refuses to seek help and believes the whole thing is a conspiracy. I request that you invite a psychologist or a psychiatrist to your podcast to discuss the impacts of these illnesses on the brain and thought processes. Peace. I thought that that was a very well put message. And at least for me, a part of this narrative and a part of this entire sort of saga that we haven't talked about enough is the fact that Kanye West is unwell. Whatever. Kanye West is unwell. He's going to say whatever he wants to say. It's harmful. It's dangerous. The rhetoric is normalizing to some of the worst forces that the earth has ever seen. It is what it is. It's not about him anymore. The reason why Kanye West is a blessing, Ye West or whatever, is a blessing because he's helping me decide who the fuck I don't want to be around no more.
Okay. Keep going. What do you mean?
He's helping me weed out people that are doing backflips to excuse and explain things that are fucking nuts. When I say nuts, I mean, he's not playing chess. He's not playing checkers.
Mm-hmm.
What he should be, he's not playing chess. He's not playing checkers. He's not playing anything because it's not a fucking game. right? When you're talking about Hitler, when you're talking about the Nazis, when you're talking about the Final Solution, when you're talking about the brand of racial identity, right, that arose from Nazism. Nazis aren't dead. They're not dead. All of that stuff mutated and sort of gestated there in Germany and went on to still be a force in the world. And it's something that people still deal with. It's about violence. It's about intimidation. It's about the inherent eugenic belief that someone is better than you. It is something that started here, went there, and is now the world over recognized by symbols, be it an eye cross, be it a boot, be it a pair of boots, be it a shaved head for the neo-Nazis, be it whatever it is. So I'm telling you is this. If you can't fix your mouth to say that that is wrong, that Nazism is wrong, that Hitler is wrong, if you're that deep to where you want to find a way to excuse that, there's nothing to talk about with me. And I'm glad, I am happy that I am able to analyze and see people with that amount of inconsistent logical ability, with that amount of bullshit lurking and murking around in their blood. There's absolutely zero reason to praise Hitler. None. Nothing. I don't give a fuck about none of it. There's not one reason to praise Hitler. There's not one reason to excuse Hitler. He's not one reason to love Hitler.
No. Are these personal friends, like, that you know? Because I guess, like, when you say that it's a blessing because it's really helping you see people for who they are these personal friends of yours? Because I guess... go ahead.
Finish your thought, Rachel.
I was just going to say, because publicly I'm not... I don't really see a whole lot of support or people excusing him, or the point where I'm like, they're helping me know who they are. I'm not seeing it. So that's why I'm asking you, is this personal for you?
So I think it's a good time to get into this, because it's a narrative it's a narrative that we deal with a lot on the podcast, with the fact that I know and I'm around people that people would consider to be problematic. I want to give this a little oxygen right now.
Okay.
In a real serious way, as honest as I can be. It's difficult for me to divorce myself from people who I think don't have some of the information that they need. All right? And there are many reasons for that. One reason is, and I'm not leaning on this as a crutch, one reason in a real way is the relationship I had with my father. Mm-hmm. My father was a smart man, a very, like, a savvy man. Mm-hmm. Like, he could read people very easily, but he was incurious. Like, the things that he knew were the things that he knew. And he had a very firm grasp on what he thought was real and what he thought didn't make any sense. I, on the other hand, it's the definition of curiosity. And a lot of times I would see in real time, like, his mind sort of considering something. Mm-hmm. Or, I mean, it wouldn't even have to be about anything serious. Like, mm-hmm. my dad would tell me that some kid that he knew, or some guy that he went to college with, or some dude that grew up in Baton Rouge was the best basketball player of all time, right? And he would mm-hmm. tell me all of these things, and he'd be very serious in a real way. He's like, this is the, because in my father's eyes, his world was what he was able to see and touch.
Sure.
And the best guy he ever saw was this dude. And I remember watching a game with my dad when I could really understand the NBA, and describing in the game everything that Michael Jordan was doing. Like, offensively, defensively, the sets they were running, the triangle offense. And I watched my father realize that basketball is a more complicated game than he thought it was. Mm-hmm. That it's not just guys in shorts chucking up the ball. He understood all of that stuff about baseball. He knew what he knew. And I have relatives like this. People that, for whatever reason, think that their part of the world, be it Maryland, Louisiana, be it Baton Rouge, that everything that they needed to know was encompassed in that. And because I went out and sought other things, I was constantly being somebody that was being like, no, this is how it is. So, or this is what I think it is. I'm not saying that all of these people were too smart to make up their own, too dumb to make up their own minds. I'm saying that like different perspectives would come. And my sister was this same way. Like we were a different generation of kids, but all of these people, I knew them and I knew that they were decent. You know what I mean? They were, they're just not bad. They're decent. And some of them, you got to push them all the time. Like the ITT story I tell, that's a real thing. Like you'd see the light bulb come on with some people when they, when they, when their world can be expanded. And so for me, being really from South Baton Rouge, Louisiana, just the people that were around me, they just weren't perfect. But they leaned on me to like almost, I was like almost like a newspaper for some of these people in a way. Oh, Van, know about that. Van, tell him. You know what I'm saying? And so I'm in a different space now and I'm in a different phase now in my life, obviously. And I don't have, and I'm not important enough to be able to have to go around and have to change everybody's perspective. But a lot of times when I see people and they have bad ideas, I don't necessarily think that they're bad people. I don't necessarily think that they're unredeemable people or people that I don't even want to be around.
That's fair.
Sometimes, yeah, I see other parts of them that are incredibly valuable. But I will agree that at a certain point, for my own health, and for my, and for the life that I've carved out and want to live for myself, that there are lines that have to be drawn. And if you're asking me, do I know people personally who have today tried to make this make sense? The answer is yes.
Can I ask you another question?
Sure.
When, and I am not trying to find reason in what these people are doing, but when there's, yeah, when they're trying to make sense of it, similar to the DM that you read, is it that people, because I don't think that this is okay to do anymore. I think there was a time when you said, and we did it on the podcast, Kanye West is suffering from mental illness. I think that we have gone way beyond that point. Not saying that he doesn't, there might be not, mental illness might not be an issue, but we're beyond that point at this. When the people are making excuses, is it based on mental health? And that's what we're writing it off as.
So I'll tell you a little bit of what I heard today. Obviously, there were some people that talked about how unwell Kanye is.
Sure.
And we know that he's unwell. At this point, the only people that will platform Kanye are people who are already, you know, I don't know what Tim Pool and them were doing. I'm not as familiar with him, but I didn't know he was kind of on that. But the people that will platform Kanye now are the people who the Alex Joneses and the people who are looking for this type of energy. I say that to say this. Some of the people were telling me about, is it that much different to praise Hitler as it is to praise Washington or to praise Jefferson or to praise any of the other bloated, slave-owning, you know, criminals that started America, right? Isn't it any different to praise them than it is to Kanye West? You know what the answer is? Not really. I concede that point. I put it in the post on Instagram. Thomas Jefferson was a man who raped a black woman for a long time. Whenever you have sex with a slave, it's rape to me. It's rape. He raped. He allowed his children to live in slavery. George Washington was one of the most brutal slavers that we've ever seen. These men did not respect the life of black people. They looked at us as cattle. All the eugenics, all of that stuff that is inside the DNA of American society, because it was inside the DNA of the founders. That's all true. Who the fuck is erecting statues for Thomas Jefferson and George Washington? We've been litigating the history of the country and how we should approach it for years now. So I don't know if a motherfucker ever saw me on President's Day say, yo, shout out Big George. Yo, TJ, what's up? I don't know if people have ever seen me do that, but to go to the links to try to dig into Adolf Hitler and find something to extrapolate out of the musings of a madman to try to see if we can somehow rescue Hitler from the history that he absolutely wanted. Hitler is remembered exactly the way he wanted to be remembered. Precisely the way he wanted to be remembered. Right?
Yeah.
that we now have to rescue Hitler from history because Kanye West is doing it. You niggas are dick riders. You niggas are stupid. And I'm done with it. I don't want to have a conversation about it. I don't want to try to intellectually like have that situation. I don't want to do that at all. What I want to do now is draw a line in my life between the serious and the unserious. And I'm actually happy that I get the opportunity to do that. Mm.
Well said. I was going to play the dick riding thing, but then I hesitated.
I was like, why was your sound? It's gonna work. I was like, why is his sound on? I thought you meant to say something.
Are you guys on the other side of this? We're going to be talking to the writer and creator of two different shows that are fantastic that you need to be watching right now. Sherman Showcase and Southside, Diallo Riddle, one half of Diallo and Bashir, the writing team, is going to be on Higher Learning to tell you why the most underrated comedy in the world right now is super duper black. We're going to talk about it on the other side of this break.
This episode is brought to you by Jiffy Lube. Cars can be a big investment, so it's important to take care of them. I once got a car that I started out with 25,000 miles on. I got it to over 200,000 miles because I took care of it. You know how you take care of a car? You take care of the maintenance, the oil, the brakes, all that stuff. And if you don't, you can have a car just completely fall apart. When your car needs maintenance, head to Jiffy Lube. They provide automotive excellence at speed. Get your oil changed, brakes checked, tons of other multi-care services. It's all done by expertly trained technicians who actually care about taking care of you and your car. Jiffy Lube, car more. To find coupons and start an instant online estimate, visit JiffyLube.com.
This episode is brought to you by Hotels.com. I was traveling internationally last year. I was in Mallorca. I didn't know the island well. I said, let me head to the north, head towards the water. Let me go on Hotels.com and see what they have available. Something preferably on the beach, maybe even a gym. Not only did I get those things, there was a kids session with exercise, gymnastics in the water, pony rides, a train. It had everything, and I didn't even want any of those things. But at least I knew they were there, just in case I changed my mind. And now finding the perfect hotel has never been easier thanks to the Hotels.com app. Whether you're looking for a family-friendly, right, all-inclusive, or a relaxing spa weekend, you can find exactly what you need and compare hotel prices, ratings, and amenities side by side. So start planning your next getaway and find your perfect somewhere in the Hotels.com app.
Oh, oh!
Did you see him pop his collar before he came out?
Oh, Diallo, don't do us like that. Turn your mic on. Diallo, don't do us like that. Diallo came in here ready to go.
No, I feel bad, man. I actually feel bad because I'm in my office, which I feel like when I go from home, it's so much more interesting looking. I didn't realize I haven't ever hung up art in this Warner Brothers office. This is embarrassing.
Flex on us again. That's two flexes. Donnie, let this run. Donnie, let this run.
Call it as well. That's too call flexing. It as well.
Maybe I'll take a comic book to the wall or something.
Right, that's embarrassing. That's three flexes. Did you write that comic, Diallo?
Not at all. No, I did not.
Okay. You guys, we have... All right, listen, I say this all the time, but look, we have somebody really special on the show. Mini story. I first get to L.A., and I see this sketch with these two guys and they're talking about this movie, right? And it's like funny as fuck, but it's funny in the way that I laugh. It's like it's got all the inside cultural jokes that are completely accurate and relevant, but it's also got this sort of highbrow sensibility to it to where a cinemaphile would know it, right? And these two guys are doing this and they have this sketch comedy group. And so I like actually send this guy a message. Like I send him a message on Facebook. I'm like, yo, man, this is so dope. It's like, I just got out here and the motherfucker wrote me back.
Cause he was mad easy to get at.
the motherfucker wrote me back. That guy is Diallo Riddle, who is an amazing writer, actor, producer, performer, who has done so much stuff. I remember some years after that, you and Bashir, your writing partner. First of all, appreciate you joining us on Higher Learning today. You guys were on Jimmy Fallon, and then now you have two shows that are two of the best shows on television, Sherman Showcase and Southside. Diallo Riddle joins us today on Higher Learning. My brother, how are you?
I'm good, man. I'm good. I think of you now in so different a way than, like, you know, like, to me, like, you're now, you know, just this dude who's done so much. But it did occur to me, I don't think of you as that guy who wrote in because you like the message anymore. You know what I'm saying? Like,
yeah,
it's just like when a friendship is really old and you forget, oh, that's how we came into existence as friends. Like, it's just, man, I'm honored to be here. I'm honored, Rachel. I don't think we've ever met before, but I'm honored. You know,
we haven't.
Yeah,
we haven't. You'll remember how we met. You'll remember this moment. I was so afraid when Van was telling that story that you were gonna say you don't remember that. That you didn't know that. I was like, oh god.
No, this man's so excited. That story well, because you know what, we put a lot of effort and heart into those. It was a joint venture between HBO back when they were in the same family as AOL. I think it was all Time Warner back then. And you know, Bashir and I were used to doing sketch comedy for like $50 a night that we would split, and we would usually eat that profit by buying, like, you know, wigs and makeup, you know. So when we first got that thing, our budget, I will never forget, our budget was $1,500 a week, which might as well have been a 9-figure deal from Netflix for us at the time, because we were like, we're loaded, we're rich for the rest of our lives. And we took all that money, we still spent it. We wanted to make sure that our sketch comedy was in the vein of like Chappelle Show, and I don't think Key and Peele was on the air yet. You got to remember, like 2007, 2008. Yeah. So like, we were just, you know, we were so happy to have anybody pay, you know, the little bit of money that we could use on costumes and cast and stuff, that we were just thrilled. And I look back at those videos now, like, we had Robin Thede.
Yeah.
We had so many people going on to just do way more. I remember our first sketch group at the time, it was me, Bashir, Robin Thede, Wyatt Cenac, Nefertari Spencer, who's on both of our TV shows nowadays. And like, we just, you know, we was just hungry, you know. We was just them young dudes fresh out of college, just ready to, you know, pull out the old Canon 5D, you know, because you didn't have phones that had, you know, 4K on them back then. So yeah, right. That was us.
Can you talk about how the two of you met? Because was it a choir? Was it an a cappella group? You and Bashir. Sorry, you and Bashir.
So I think I know where this is going. We met. So we were both members of Kaumba, which was the Black gospel choir at Harvard. And whenever you're at a white school and the Black kids get together, you inevitably choose a African sounding name for whatever group you form. It doesn't matter what you guys do. But we were like, okay,
we're the Timbuktu Steppers.
And anybody could join. You didn't have to be Christian. You didn't even have to be able to really sing. We had like 50 members. It was big. But Bashir and I, you know, we figured out pretty quickly that we had the same sense of humor. And that's when we formed an offshoot that was going to sing secular music, like Jodeci, Shy, Silk type, you know, songs. And that was called Brothers. Because we're really inventive, and I hope nobody is like, man, these are really hacky with what they got. No, we were called Brothers, and if you had a coffee shop in Boston, we would show up and we would sing to the people drinking coffee. You know, we would sing like, you know, Usher Raymond, you know, These Are My Confessions type songs, and that's what we did.
Bedtime music.
Yeah. Secular music, that was what we called it.
So you and Bashir have been working together for so long, and I'm seeing you guys are both like on top of the industry right now. I'm seeing Bashir pop up everywhere.
Oh, that's news to me, bruh.
He always does this. Y'all, he always does this. I have literally watched the world discover both Southside and Sherman Showcase. I've watched it.
We need to go intergalactic, because we need a few more worlds to discover both shows. We need a few more worlds.
So let me ask you this though. Like, I would, when I would see people talk about the show, I would send you, hey, bro, like, especially during the pandemic, people were watching it. They were talking about how funny specifically Southside was. Season three, the premiere of Southside is on HBO Max, premieres on December 8th. I would show you this. Do you feel like the world has actually really discovered the show yet?
No.
You don't?
No, okay. I don't. I listen, I think that we're like, right now, I would say both shows to a certain extent, maybe Sherman Showcase even more than Southside, are still like freaks and geeks. You know, it's this term that we use in the business when a show, like anybody who's seen it, and especially people in the industry see the show, they're like, this is brilliant. This is phenomenal. You get great write-ups in the New York Times, the damn New Yorker, LA Times, Washington Post. Everybody loves your show. But when you talk to the network, they're like, well, we're still hoping to get a couple of more viewers engaged. You know, like I still feel like we're like that underground hit. That's that thing that, like, it's like when people go back and talk about 90s hip hop and suddenly everybody knows about A Tribe Called Quest. But when you were there, like only people who were into hip hop were really into A Tribe Called Quest. A lot of your white friends, you know, they were stumped, you know, when you would bring up Tribe. They knew about Snoop and Dre and eventually about Biggie. But like, you know, they weren't all checking for Jungle Brothers. I feel like our show is like the native tongues. I feel like both of our shows are like the native tongues of TV, because I feel like people who watch them like them. But, you know, we're not in a place like, okay, Sherman Showcase, we're on IFC. To be on IFC, even just 10 years ago, was to be in the same category as Portlandia and the early seasons of Documentary Now. And I feel like, you know, to be on IFC today, like, I feel ridiculous when I get on Instagram and I'm like, hey, y'all, check out Sherman Showcase. It comes on 10:30 in New York, but it's actually 7:30 in Los Angeles, and it might be at 9:30 in Chicago. So just figure out when you can watch it. But when you do watch it, go to that certain TV that's on your wall. You can't pull it up on your phone. That's impossible. What are you talking about? It's not the future yet. Like, I just feel like we've had to really sort of like deal with being on linear cable at a time when most people, and myself included, we've cut a lot of cords. And so we have to sort of wait until these things start streaming on Hulu. But by then, the linear cable people have sort of like moved on to whatever. They're back. They're on to Interview with a Vampire, you know, as if the Anne Rice estate needs more money. Like, it's just an interesting time to be in TV. I have kids now, and they spend a lot of time watching YouTube videos. And if you have kids who watch YouTube videos, you realize that these are people who literally are watching other people react to something they saw on YouTube. And I'm just like, can you guys watch something with a script? Like, can you guys please watch something? Because we're just in a world now where, like, you know, it's just an interesting time to be in TV. I think that's what Sherman Showcase is doing with HBO Max. A lot more people know how to find that, download that, get that. So I feel like Southside does have a larger audience. And also, let's just be honest, Southside, as opposed to Sherman's, which is a lot more like our HBO, you know, show that originally brought you into the mix. Mm-hmm. You know, HBO Max and Southside, we're doing a show with characters. They are in a neighborhood and an environment that I think that people understand. And I think that we go out of our way to be authentic about that. So I do think Southside has a few more viewers, but I know for a fact that we would always, anytime people tell me that they love Southside, I'm always like, great, tell five more people, because quite honestly, we can always use more people watching either show. I know that was long-winded, but you just have to catch me, you know, at a time when I just finished talking to some network people, and I'm just like, you know, all we can do is do the best show that we can do. After that, it's sort of more on y'all to like inform people and let people know that these shows exist.
That's what I want to piggyback on that, because this was, I was going to ask you, like, it's two part, because I want you to talk about, since Southside is about to come out December 8th. Tell us a little bit about what we can expect on the new season.
Oh man!
But I also want to say, with talking to networks and networks saying, you know, like, oh, can you get a few more people engaged? Do you ever feel pressure? I don't want you to get in trouble, but do you feel any kind of pressure that they try to make you do something different that's not what you originally wanted for Southside? Do you feel any pressure that they want to change you to make you get more in?
No, on Southside, I will say, we've never felt pressure to make it a show. They've never been like, hey, how about some, you know, hot young 18 to 34 year olds to, you know, turn up the heat on the show. You know, like, we've never had to deal with that at all. We've always done exactly the show that we wanted to do. In fact, you see it from the very first frame of Southside. We were never told, oh, you have to go out to these Hollywood actors to draw in viewers, and then after that, you can populate the show with whoever you want. No, literally, there's a reason why the show stars two guys who you've never seen star in anything else. This is literally Bashir's brother and his one of his friends from childhood. And they are super talented. You know, they can star on other shows, but
they are hysterical.
But we were never told, oh, go out to these three or four Hollywood approved actors. We think part of the appeal of Southside is the fact that you have people who are from the South Side, who you've never seen do anything really outside of this show. And I think that that's what makes it special, because it's a show that, you know, uses real people from the South Side. And they might be the funniest people that, you know, just from the hood, just from people that we knew growing up. But like, they're funny people. And we were like, let's turn the camera on them. You know, like if you talk to a lot of comedians and you ask them, who's the funniest person you know, a lot of times they won't mention another stand-up or some comedy act, some comedy writer who they know. They'll be like, you know, it's my dude who's a mechanic back home in, you know, Lansing, Michigan. You know what I mean? Like, we went out of our way to go to the actual Southside Chicago and find Chicago-based and specifically Southside Chicago-based actors and actresses and give them the chance to shine, because there's a certain cadence that comes out of Chicago that we wanted to throw a spotlight on.
So I want to ask you about one scene in particular that I knew was going to go viral when people started watching the show.
Uh-oh, here we go. I think I know what you're going to bring up. Let's do this.
So there's a scene where, from a hysterical episode, where there's an older lady who was an activist back in the day.
Yep.
Rachel, have you seen this?
No.
Oh, my God. This lady, she's an activist back in the day. There's a character on the show, the lady
Dorothy
cop.
Brown. Her name is Dorothy Brown on the show.
Dorothy Brown. Yeah.
That's the character name.
And, you know, she wants to buy her building, but she doesn't want to put her out. Anyway, they get into an argument. And this older lady starts going in on Coretta Scott King. I remember when I first watched it, she was like, and it was, the things that she was saying had nothing to do with anything. She was like, Coretta Scott King didn't have a good sense of humor.
Wasn't funny. No, she said she was not funny.
She said she wasn't funny. She's like, and I tell you right now, the bitch wasn't funny. I'm like, oh my God. When that scene hit Twitter, I remember smiling. I'm like, I knew it. Like, and I remember somebody put, nah, man, what is this? LOL. And I'm like, I sent it to you. I was like, this is Southside. And this is, it's not just that type of thing. It's trying to sell popcorn outside the movie. It's like, it's all of the things in the show that make the show super relatable. But I'm telling you guys, it is the funniest fucking thing going right now.
So let's talk about that scene and the mission statement of Southside in general. I always say you can't really control who you are, who your audience is, but you can write towards a particular audience.
Okay.
And I will say that Southside, probably more than any show that I've ever written for, we really do come at it with the point of view. And I know that we have so many non-Black viewers of Southside, but we really do write it like, what's some stuff that would make your Black family laugh at the dinner table that you may not even want non-Black people laughing at? You know, I remember when we were writing that scene, I wasn't crazy about it. I'm from Atlanta, Georgia. Like, to say, you know, that's in OK's hometown.
Right.
I should also say I'm the only writer on the show who's not from Chicago. Everybody else is. And that's why I think it comes across as so authentic. But when that joke got pitched, I remember there was a big debate in the writer's room of like, is this okay? Because we know that, you know, literally neo-Nazis can take that one line that she says and loop it over and over and over. And are we okay giving this to the world when we know that not everybody writing this is, not everybody reading, not everybody watching this show is going to be Black? And we had a long debate about it. And Bashir and I actually had a sidebar that got a little bit heated because, again, I'm from Atlanta. I don't like to do anything that's going to cast aspersions. But at the end of the day, you know, we both decided, you know, well, look, nobody ever said that Coretta Scott King had to be the funniest person.
Right. That's,
you know,
the
what
thing.
I mean? Like, that's the thing, right? So, and by the way, Dorothy Brown is supposed to be a very caustic and bitter, you know, woman who feels like history passed her by. So we were like, would the character say this?
Yeah.
Would her character say yes? Because the same way that, like, I would never murder somebody in real life, but I might have a character who kills somebody on a TV show. So that was what we ran with. And what was funny to me was that when that episode first came out, it didn't create a whole lot of buzz. I think sadly, because again, we never had the level of viewership I think that the show deserves. But at some point, like you said, somebody on Twitter got out there and right. saw it and then posted it. And then I'm getting all the people who, I forget what that sector of the universe is called, but basically they kind of hate on anything that,
oh, yeah, yeah.
That sort of, and so like they definitely came for me, and not Bashir, because Bashir is famously not on social media. They came after me and they were like, you're terrible. You're a terrible person. How can you say that about our Kings of Queens? And I just think that, look, man, I'm not even here to defend that line today. I think that at the end of the day,
it's
we nothing try to write something.
It was the same thing like in Coming to America when the guy says that Martin Luther King Jr. punched
him in the chest. Him in the chest, right?
There's nothing to defend. Like it's funny. We know that Martin Luther King Jr. didn't kick the man in the chest.
Martin Luther King Jr. was walking around Memphis kicking people in the chest.
There's nothing to defend. Diallo, there's nothing to defend.
It's like Dorothy Brown is also a fictional character. Guys, nobody ever said this in real life. So,
right.
You know, like we're not here to make fun of our icons and our cherished leaders of the past. I think if anything, it's what made a room full of Black people laugh. And I think, look, it's always going to be dicey when you are doing humor that, yeah, you may not want to look out and see, you know, a bunch of people who aren't Black, who haven't been through what you've been through, laughing at something. But I also think there's a sort of universality of comedy. Like I always go back to the Seinfeld episode where everybody wanted the loaf of marble rye.
Uh-huh.
And, you know, they end up chasing him and he's with the marble rye. I didn't grow up as in New York. I didn't grow up as Jewish, but I got why that was funny because it was so culturally specific. And I feel like that's the one thing that we do on South Side. We keep it very, very culturally specific. I'm reminded of another episode that I thought might get us in trouble. And we were actually vindicated in real life where a character dies. And then at his funeral, he basically, he's at the funeral standing up as if he's in the club. Yeah. You know, we did this episode, and then a couple of months after the episode came out, it happened in real life.
It really happened.
This rapper got shot, and per his wishes, per his dying wishes, his funeral was in a club, and he was decked out. He had on the fresh Jordans and the chains, and it was just like our episode. They were like, oh, snap, Southside done predicted the future, you know? Like, but right. No, it was because Bashir's mom in real life was handed a flyer for a funeral, but the funeral flyer looked like it was for a night at a nightclub. Right. And so we had no idea what was going to happen with Dude in real life at that point when we wrote that episode and shot that episode. It's just that by paying attention to what makes our people laugh, what's happening in the culture, and just being a fly on the wall for our own community, we predicted some things that we could have never known were going to actually happen. I think that's why the show is enjoyable, because we basically have a room full of Black people trying to make each other laugh. And so the humor really does come from a pure place.
Yeah, because like the world we live in now, you know, it's scary. You know, you don't know if you're gonna get canceled. You don't know if you're gonna, you know, offend people. How do you protect that? Because I mean, we even on this show, we have a lot of non-Black listeners, but Van and I are very much still stay true to who we are. Like, how do you protect that to make that comedy? Like you said, everybody in the room is laughing, but then also know that people listening to it, maybe they shouldn't be laughing. Maybe they might take it the wrong way.
True.
How do you do that?
I'll say two quick things on that. One is that I fundamentally believe that you kind of have to do what's true to you and what makes you laugh and just put it out there. Does that make sense? Like, I think if you spend any time self-censoring, if you spend any time sort of like worried about who might get their hands on a joke, you're not going to end up writing anything that's good. I think that we write what we think is funny, and then we just kind of put it out there. And that's sort of like across the board. And I'm sort of controversial when it comes to, I actually don't believe that cancel culture is a thing. I don't. I think it's a boogeyman.
I agree.
When people tell me who, you know, I actually asked my son, because, you know, he's, my oldest kid is on TikTok now. He's 13 years old. And he came up to me and he was like, hey, Dad, do you think this is funny? And it was like a black comedian, but the black comedian was making some jokes based on some really old stereotypes about, like, you know, fried chicken, you know? And I was just like, honestly, this isn't funny, Simon. And before I had the chance to tell him why I didn't like it, he was like, oh, do you think this guy's going to get canceled? Now, this is coming out of a 13-year-old's mouth. Right. And I was like, son, I was like, I have a problem with you walking around worried about who's getting canceled. I was like, tell me who you think has been canceled. He was like, Dave Chappelle and the woman who wrote Harry Potter books. And he was rolling off, like, he was rolling off all these people who've been canceled. He Dave Chappelle, J.K. Rowling. I think he might have said Joe Rogan, which I didn't even know my kid knew who Joe Rogan was. I was like, son, you realize everybody you're naming is a bazillionaire.
Famously like, wealthy.
Like, super duper wealthy. I was like, I think that cancel culture is sort of a boogeyman and a tool of such that when people say things that, like, people, you know, say, hey, that's not cool, they immediately, like, sort of self-victimize and say, hey, are you going to cancel me now? Like, I haven't seen anybody. If anything, I feel like people have, like, sort of built a fan base by saying things that they think will get them canceled. So in some ways, I feel like it's almost like a profit generator. And I think it would be very easy for me to, like, write something to get me canceled. And I just don't know. I think it's a bummer subject. So I'm going to move on from that. But I think to your larger point about, like, do we self-censor? No, I think we write what we think is funny. And then we just ride with it. Because honestly, I don't think that me and my writing partner are weirdos. I personally think if we write something that we think is funny and edgy and just really just kind of humor that you haven't heard before, if we're laughing at it, I think there are other people out there who will laugh at it. And that's why I think that our humor does come from an often unsafe place, because it's hard to laugh at something if you've heard it a million times before. That's why I didn't like the thing that, you know, my kid brought me. I was like, dude, these stereotypes have been around since the 70s. I mean, like, you know, I want humor that I haven't already heard a million times. And that's why I think that we don't worry about that. We just worry about, is it funny to us? Is it something that we haven't seen before? Okay, then let's do it. And let's have fun doing it. And so far it has not hurt us.
Sell us on the show. It is plug time. Not sell us on the show. Tell people where they can watch it, how they can watch it. We have to make this season, the Southside, this season of Sherman Showcase, the biggest seasons ever.
Man, I always say that the shows are the biggest advocates for themselves. You know what I'm saying? And with Southside especially, like, if you've never seen it, just all you got to do is just get HBO Max. You probably already have it. Just watch the first episode. I guarantee you will stick around for both seasons that are already up there, and season three is going to be joining it, going to be joining those two seasons next week. I guarantee you, it is raw, it is hilarious, it is unexpected. I mean, like, without giving away any spoilers, we have an episode this season that I feel like is shot and sort of done in a very Christopher Nolan way, because he did The Dark Knight in Chicago, and we were like, how can we do our own version of a Christopher Nolan episode of Southside? I think we accomplished that. We have Chance the Rapper back. We've got local, you know, personalities from radio, like Leon Rogers is in an episode. We've got, I just feel like we've sort of gone out of our way to never give people the expected. I think that if you're looking for, you know, edgy sort of, like, you know, humor that just doesn't stop delivering. I mean, we intentionally, when we edit these episodes, we always make sure that you can't get every joke upon the first viewing. Right. And I think that's why somebody told me last night that he's watched, what episode did he say he watched? It might've been the day the Jordans dropped. We have an episode in season one where the cops are all gathered at the police station. They're like, all right, nobody can go, you know, nobody can go on vacation time or go home early. Cause as you know, today is that day that we all fear. It's the day that the new Jordans come out. We have to be doubly prepared. Everybody's going to work a double shift tonight because, you know, Chicago's going to be crazy. And that's, I think, episode four of season one. Like, this dude told me online he's watched it, you know, twice a month, every month since it came out, you know, and he says he always gets, like, new levels and stuff. Like, we've been compared to The Office. We've been compared to, what's the other show they always compare us to? But I don't think there's any show, I don't think that we're like The Office. I think that yes.
You guys have you strike a tone that's very unique.
Yeah, I just think, I can see why people call us a workplace comedy, but if you've seen more than three episodes of the show, you know that we'll go anywhere, you know, in on the South Side of Chicago. And even outside of this, we have a whole episode that takes place in Roscoe Village, which is not the South Side. You know what I'm saying? Like, we're the most Chicago show, I think, because we treat the South Side of Chicago sort of like the way Springfield is treated on The Simpsons. It's a jump off point. And at some point, yeah, you'll see certain characters every episode, but they could be doing unexpected things. There's a whole episode this season where our characters make it out to the South Suburbs, which if you know anything about Chicago, you know.
That's South when you Suburbs, get out of it. Yeah.
Yeah, it's like, you know, it's a totally different vibe. We have a whole episode about Chicago house music this season that I really love, because I think that, you know, and I was happy to see Beyonce come out with a house song. Like, I would love for Black people to, you know, sort of get back into house music. That is dance music that we, you know, created at a club in Chicago called The Warehouse. That's why it's called house music. You know, like, I'd love to see us get more into dance, because there's sort of an exuberance that you feel when music gets up to 120 BPMs. Like, mm-hmm. You know, we have a lot of fun with the show, and I know that I'm being verbose, but I really want people to check out the show. So it's Southside, it's on HBO Max, and please watch it.
We will
watch it.
And
Sherman Showcase.
And Sherman Showcase.
Sherman Showcase. Yes. So here's where it's a little confusing. The first season of Sherman Showcase is on Hulu. There's a thing that says season two, but it's really just our Black History Month special, which I also think is a very amazing hour of TV. It was sort of like an hour-long special that came out in 2020. But if you want to see the latest season two of Sherman Showcase, download at AMC Plus. It migrates to Hulu sometime top of next year, but download AMC Plus and you can get a whole new season of Sherman Showcase. It's a really good show. It takes almost no time to download it. You can also get AMC Plus, I think, through Amazon Prime. So if you have Prime Video, look us up and you can download us there as well.
Diallo Riddle, one of the funniest men in the entire world. Thank you for joining us today on Higher Learning, man. We're gonna check back in with you. Because there's more stuff I want to talk to you about.
I know, man. I feel like we've only scratched the surface.
We've only scratched the surface. We're going to bring you back, man. But look, I appreciate
you. I'm sorry. Is that a Child of God hoodie you've got on, Rachel?
It is. You mentioned Chance the Rapper. And I was like, I just happened to be wearing Chance the Rapper. Got the art in the back. I'm a big Chance fan. Yeah.
Listen, Chance is on both shows. He's on Sherman Showcase this season, and he's back on Southside for, I think, one of the... I'd be surprised. I'm going to put this out there. I think he should get the Emmy for Best Guest Star Appearance, because his episode of Southside this season is insane. And I feel like that bruh is going to get, if people watch the show, he's going to get a lot of props. Big time comedy, big funny. He crushed it. He killed it.
Wow.
And
wow.
I'm just putting that out there. Shout out to Chance.
Speaking of two existence, Diallo, we will see you. Thank you for joining us today on Higher Learning, my brother.
Thank you so much. I appreciate it.
This episode is brought to you by Cars.com. When you add your car to your garage on Cars.com, you'll unlock access to real-time insights into how much your car is worth. Plus, view its historical and projected value to decide when to sell. So when the time is right, you can secure an instant offer from a local dealership or sell it yourself on Cars.com. Start tracking your car's value with your garage on Cars.com.
On May 10th, Kingdom of the Planet of the Apes is coming to IMAX and theaters everywhere.
What a wonderful day!
This summer, one movie event will reign.
It is our time.
They stole my village.
I know where they're taking your clan.
Bend for your king.
Never.
Kingdom of the Planet of the Apes. Only in theaters May 10th. Tickets on sale now. Rated PG-13. Some material may be inappropriate for children under 13.
Rachel, I just want to really talk about real quick, white mess real quick. Well, not really white mess. It's kind of like interracial mess.
All right, I don't want to do it.
We have to do it.
I know where we're going. I want to check out. I'm going to tap out. Ashley's coming in.
Donnie, jump on real quick.
I'm here. What's up?
So they fucking... at Good Morning America, apparently. They fucking... what's this guy's name? TJ Holmes?
TJ Holmes.
TJ John Holmes. So it's like TJ Holmes and what's the white lady's name? She's blonde.
Amy Robach.
Amy Robach. He just couldn't help himself. He just couldn't help himself. It's right there. You know what I mean? It's in the morning. Craft service comes. They standing right next to the place. It's coffee. Hey, how are you? How was your weekend? I went to Martha's Vineyard, though. Did you? Yeah, what do you like to do at Martha's Vineyard? I don't know. I like to go down there to the beach, lay on the sand. Sometimes let the sun tickle my body. He's like, what? She's like, yeah. You know, if I stay out there long enough, I get a little moist. He's like, oh, my God. He just Dr. Umar just out of his brain and they're gone. I don't know if people know. Rachel's sinking down because she knows these people. I don't know them. I don't know what's going on. But this is the thing.
I don't know what's going on either.
Amy,
I don't know what I read.
Amy and TJ apparently were spotted on a romantic vacation together somewhere. I didn't even see the pictures. I just saw everybody talking about my... Everyone was interested in what was going on between the thing. TJ, he looked like Barack Obama cousin. And he's got a very Obama-esque thing. And it looked like to me, he was in that vanilla bean. He was vanilla bean ice cream. Oh. Donnie's got some audio for us. Go ahead.
Welcome to What You Need to Know, GMA3, and it's Friday Eve.
Oh, who's looking forward to the weekend?
Me.
Yeah?
Yes,
yeah,
of course.
Of course we are. Welcome, everybody, to GMA3. What you...
Wow. I hadn't heard that.
I bet you are looking forward to the weekend, you nasty motherfucker. You nasty motherfucker, your little fast ass. I bet you all looking forward to the weekend. God damn, Donnie, run that again. You can cut.
No,
Donnie, run it again. Donnie, run that shit again. You can cut the sexual tension with a used condom. Like, Donnie, like, put, run that again.
Good afternoon, everybody. Welcome to What You Need to Know, GMA3, and it's Friday Eve.
Oh. I'm looking forward to the weekend.
Me?
Yeah?
Yes.
Me?
Of course.
Yes.
Of course we are.
Welcome, of course
everybody.
We are.
GMA3. What you
welcome,
know.
Everybody.
Good to see you. Track.
Did you hear how his voice got super aggressive when that body, he lost?
He always sounds like
welcome
that.
Welcome, everybody, to my dick. Welcome, everybody, to my beige scepter. Boy, I bet he was telling his boys, he's like, bruh, I'm telling you, man, in that thing, dog, this weekend is going down. She come around here looking crazy, bruh. She look good. I got me a little thing. Rachel, but these are your friends, right?
I am friendly with both. I am good friends with TJ.
Yeah.
All I will say is what's being reported is that they had separated from their spouses, and you know, this is what's being reported. They had separated from their spouses, and now that they're then the pictures came out. So
they separated from their spouses, and maybe okay, so they're separated from their spouses, so they went on a little nasty asses. They went on a little hot asses. They hot together. So
I don't know anything about this. I know they've been friends for years. They have great on-camera chemistry.
I bet they do.
They have a successful show. I don't know any truth to what is being reported or not.
Both of them. Leaking all over the set. Just slipping all over. Just slipping all over the set. You can just see it. Slip.
Look at the joy you get from
leak,
it.
Leak.
You love the peak mess segment.
Just funny.
And now you've created a new one.
Yeah, peak, like, now this nigga about to dress totally different. And nigga go, I guarantee you, now that this
what
is
does
out.
What that look like, Van?
Next week he gonna be in a hoodie. He gonna be straight up. He gonna have some Ciroc. And we know who you are, bruh. We know. Shout out to him. Shout out to her, man. Live your life. See? Y'all try to be prudes. They ain't being prude over at Good Morning America. Good morning, all right. Good morning after America. That's what they're doing. All right. You know, you Rachel, you know it's getting freaky over there. All right. Tell Billy Bush to chill. So
he's not a part of that show.
he looked freaky too though. All right, mailbag. Mailbag time. Time to read your letters and then we'll reply to them. Oh, it's mailbag time. Write us with your queries and we'll chime in.
All right, the first one comes from Not a Real Person on Reddit. They ask, what is your dream retirement destination? Do you have one?
Anguilla.
I was just going to say out of this country.
Anguilla.
Somewhere out of this country. That's where it is.
Anguilla, beautiful, man.
I need to be by water. Mm-hmm. It's peaceful at night. It's calming. Somewhere out of United States.
So there's two. There's either Anguilla or big ass ranch in the middle of Louisiana like John Dutton.
You want to be in Louisiana? Okay. We haven't even talked about this.
Yeah.
During my flu days, mm-hmm. I started watching Yellowstone.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
I'm not caught up, mm-hmm. but I am already in season 4.
Yeah. Your friend is a fucking troublemaker.
Okay. Let's not talk about Laramie.
She's a fucking troublemaker.
I don't want to hear it.
Fucking troublemaker. Almost.
No, I'm not there yet. But you know what I have to do? I don't know if you watch the other shows, 1883 or whatever. Yeah. I have to do 1923 tomorrow. Yeah, I'll tell you how it is.
I'm into it. All the white people that they want me to watch on the Yellowstone Network, I'll watch them.
I'd like to add something to the mailbag. Hold, please. This is a question specifically for you, Van.
Uh-huh.
My cousin Tremaine listens to the show.
Sweet.
Every single episode.
Nice.
And he has a specific question for you.
Let's do it.
And I'm a terrible cousin because I can't find it and I'm good and I want to freestyle it, but we know how that goes.
Yeah.
It is.
Well, I build up.
Wait. The question has to do with Thundercats.
Okay.
And here it is. From Tremaine. Mm-hmm. What would you like your Thundercats cast to be?
Ooh.
If you had to cast someone for it, past or present, who would you cast?
Ooh, freaky. I love this question. Okay.
I mean, it could be someone who's no longer with us when I say past or present.
Nah, I'm not doing that. Okay. So, Panthro, right now, I would have played by Wesley Snipes. Okay. Yeah. Panthro, I'd have played by Wesley Snipes. Lion-O. For me right now would be the hardest to cast. Chitara, I've thought about Chitara. So there's this girl, her name is Mackenzie. She's Mackenzie Phillips is her name. No, not Mackenzie Phillips. That's the other.
What is she in?
She's in The Martian. She's in The Martian. She's a tall lady. Mackenzie Davis. She's from Black Mirror. So I'd have her play Chitara. She's a tall lady. She's 5'10". I'd have her play Chitara. Panthro would be Wesley Snipes. Lion-O, Kevin Hart could play, what's the little creature's name?
I don't know Thundercats.
Oh, yeah.
Snarf.
Snarf. Snarf, snarf, snarf. Kevin Hart could play Snarf. Who could play Lion-O? Donnie, help me out with Lion-O. So with Lion-O, I'm going to go. Let's put parameters around this. Lion-O, I'm going to go 32 years old, maybe younger, because if she's 35. So Lion-O, I'm going to go a 30-year-old Lion-O.
I'm looking at Lion-O.
Tall.
Maybe it should be like a, it shouldn't be, it should be a new face.
Maybe a new face for Lion-O?
I think so. This is a star-making role.
It's a star-making role. But we have to take somebody that's done some stuff though, right? Can't, like.
Lion-O's got this red hair?
Yeah, Lion-O. But
it should be that one guy who plays Superman. Henry Cavill.
Doesn't he?
Yeah, so that's like a terrible idea.
Oh.
So well, you can
he's big.
Yeah, he's okay. Big, but that's not.
Well, Ashley, I was gonna say Carrot Top.
Jesus Christ. You know what? How about this? Because this is a great question. Let me chew on this for a second. Cause I gotta think of Mum Ra too. I gotta think of everybody. I got somebody from Mum Ra that'll kinda be good. Let me think about this. Let me chew on this. I wanna hear the Reddits No, I don't want to hear the Reddits. I do want to hear the Reddits. I want to hear everybody's thoughts. I don't want to hear everybody's thoughts because I want it to influence me. Don't tell me. I'm on Monday's podcast. I'm going to give Tremaine my perfect and an amazing Thundercats cast. Ashley, now that you've done that, now you have to come up with a Thundercats cast too.
So what about me?
You know what? You need to cast? You need to cast Rajah Binks. That's who you cast.
Okay. Rajah Binks has star potential. Yeah, you know I'm right.
You cast Rajah Binks. Me and Ashley, because Ashley's got the right idea. She's like, Henry Cavill's already Superman, so we can't have him be Lionel. But she's got the right idea. You need somebody with that cut of the jib. What about Will Poulter? No, because he's Adam Warlock, and I don't think he works, but he actually kind of does work, to be honest with you. He kind of does work as Lionel. He actually fucking looks like Lionel.
That's one thing. He's got a cat face.
He's got a cat face. Mm-hmm. You think about, like, he does.
It's the eyebrows.
I'm not going to lie. That's not Donnie. He got a cat face. He could be Lionel. I remember Lionel, to me, I like Lionel, but Lionel is not, like, the best part of the Thundercats to me. You know, and then we got to cast them all. We got to cast Wally Cat, everybody. We can think about them, you know, whatever. Could Timothy Chalamet be Lionel? No, he's too small. Okay, that's a great question. I'll come back with my full cast next week. That's a great question. All right, one more.
Okay, this is a company question, but it's not from a company person. Jen on Instagram asks, share. This is a statement. She demands share your Spotify Wrapped.
My Spotify Wrapped was all sleep podcasts. No bullshit. It was all podcasts that help you go to sleep.
Oh, that's nice.
You know what I mean? Like, Spotify has these great podcasts. Sleep time, nappy time, go to sleep, sleepy to sleep, sleep, sleep. So when I looked at it, it was all Dreamscapes, The Wolf of Sleep, all of that type of stuff like that. And then, like, my most played artist this year on Spotify was Drake.
So you do like the album, the new album.
It's not even that I like the album. It's that Drake has so many songs, it's not even fair. I didn't listen to Honestly Nevermind. And I didn't listen to Honestly Nevermind, Not Really. And I haven't really even listened that much to the joint he just put out with 21 Savage. And he's still...
That's what I'm asking.
He still was my most played artist this year. Still.
Mm.
It's crazy. All right. Thank you to Diallo for joining us today. You guys, please watch outside. Donnie, if you don't mind, if people just want to hear the audio of
The intro?
No, not the intro. The audio of the Coretta Scott King scene. Let's throw it in there for him. Even just audio, it's funny. Okay? I don't know if we can even
Dorothy
do that.
Dorothy Brown is such a fantastic name.
It's a great song.
You could never be my favorite civil rights icon because it's Coretta Scott King. She is a genius. She's beloved. She is a queen. Fuck Coretta Scott King. Now, you may know her as King, but I just know her as Retta. I always thought she was so funny. What a bitch never made me laugh. One more motherfucking thing about Coretta Scott King. I will bust in broad daylight, bitch. I don't give a fuck.
Yeah. All right. Take the team caps off, but do not stop learning. I am Van Lathan Jr.
I'm Rachel and Lindsay. Bye, guys.
This episode is brought to you by Hotels.com. When I went on my last holiday to Cape Town, it was amazing. My friends were there, the weather was phenomenal, and most importantly, the food was fantastic. But one thing I struggled with was finding the right places to stay. You know, all I want is a great bed, a fantastic shower, and breakfast that doesn't end at 8 a.m. I'm on holiday. I'm still sleeping. I also like ease, and the Hotels.com app easily helps me to find a perfect hotel for every trip. Whether you're looking for a family-friendly getaway or a relaxing spa weekend, on the Hotels.com app, you can compare up to 5 hotels side by side. Now, why would you want to do that? So you can see prices, amenities, and star ratings. And best of all, you don't have to switch back and forth between options. See? Ease. So, start planning your next getaway and find your perfect somewhere in the Hotels.com app today.